And welcome back to the United Masterclass, a tactical podcast about Manchester United. I'm your host, Haider Abani, and I'm joined by Rob Blanchett as ever today. Rob, United have put those smiles back on our faces after two really, really good back-to-back wins against Brentford and Everton. Two potentially tricky and almost banana skin fixtures for Manchester United. That's 6 points, that's three goals, none conceded as well. After that terrible performance at Newcastle, you know, we were sitting here and we did quite a drab show because it was poor across, not just from the tactics, but the performance, the effort, etc. But the lads have really dug deep and found a way to solidify their position in top four. We're now joint with Newcastle. Obviously, we're just a little bit lower on goal difference, but a really, really good week. And it's great to see that. So, yeah, how are you feeling about it?
Not bad. I think these two games, as you said, were potential banana skins. I think I described them as getting over two humps in the road. So I think when you look at Brentford and you look at Everton, two very similar teams in some of their aspects of what they want to do to you and how do you mitigate it without Casemiro? Well, that's kind of what the story, I think, of these two victories were. 6 points, two clean sheets, and you're kind of pushing towards top four. You need to kind of carry on in this race with Tottenham now. I keep saying this. We're not in a race with Newcastle anymore. We're in a race with Tottenham. Top four is all that matters. And we need to get that final spot because that really is what the season will be defined on.
Well, look, Spurs won yesterday. I mean, some of those refereeing decisions, we won't go into it, for Brighton were absolutely shocking. And I'm not surprised. De Zerbi was full of fury yesterday. But when you have a look at United's results, if United can go and beat Nottingham Forest, obviously we've got Sevilla midweek, and then they go and beat Spurs. I think top four looks like it's ours. Obviously, it's very possible that United can go and lose games. But all in all, considering how many games that the squad has played, you can see tiredness creeping in. United are actually in a positive situation. Eriksen's back. We'll talk about him a little bit later. Martial's getting minutes, and we've got Casemiro back next game. So while Marcus is injured, you played a lot of games, there's actually really, really key players, especially Man United's first-choice midfield, coming back in this really key period. We've got the FA Cup semi-final against Brighton. I still think City will win the FA Cup, to be honest with you. I think they're a level above us, and I'm not too confident. Well, we have to get through Brighton, but I'm not too confident we'd be able to beat them. But win the Europa League, get top four, win the Carabao Cup. It's a sensational first season for Ten Hag to build on. Let's see what happens in the summer in terms of the ownership. But there's a lot to be positive about. Although we will, every single week, and this is what we'll always do on the show, there's no agendas. We'll always analyse what we see and how that affects the bigger picture, because that's really, really important. But we'll never, ever sort of sit here and have, you know, an agenda. And this is what I kind of want to break down today in the show, because when you look at the bigger picture, United had some ups and some downs, but Ten Hag has had a really, really good season. And you can see that there's a project, and you can see that there's progress, and you can see where the project is going, which perhaps I couldn't see under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and maybe managers before then.
That's fair. I think that's fair. Exactly. I think this is what we're talking about with Ten Hag, is that even when things go wrong, yeah, it's our jobs here to highlight those things. We talk about tactics, talk about all the good stuff and the bad stuff. And I think that's where it is. And, you know, our show is about balance. It's never about digging out a player. It's never about, as you said, agendas. I don't really understand any of that in football. Like, we are Man United fans who want Man United to win. So, like, why would we kind of dig out some players and not others? Like, football isn't a popularity contest to me. It's literally about tactics. It's a sport. So we will always take it from the sporting angle.
Really, really important. You speak out the highs, but you also need to analyse the lows, because that's where you learn the most. We learned the most from Manchester United and what, for example, isn't going to work. Scott McTominay, let's say, as the number 10. We've learned that. And Ten Hag's learned that as well. And he shifted it. And we're going to talk about that today. So what we're going to talk about, guys, is we're going to talk about the overview of the match. We'll talk about some of the key passing statistics that we'll drill in today, some individual numbers. Wan-Bissaka, Bruno and Sabitzer are players that we're going to talk about in more detail, because there was a really interesting thing that Ten Hag did, and I think it worked well yesterday. We'll talk about 4-3-3 versus 4-1-5, the differences, the pros and the cons, and why United will now go back to 4-1-5, because Christian Eriksen is back, Casemiro is coming back, and I think that's really, really key. And we'll talk about that later on. And we'll also talk about Anthony Martial. So, guys, as always, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, give us a follow on @MayUnitedMC, and Rob a follow on @_Rob_B. Make sure that you do hit that like button so that it helps with the algorithm and we get this video out to as many people as possible. So, Rob, let's just start, as always, every single week, the graphic from SofaScore, the formation. As always, it seems every single week, SofaScore get United's formation wrong because United didn't play a 4-2-3-1. But we saw some changes. David De Gea remained in net. Wan-Bissaka back in. I know that you're quite happy to see that. Diogo Dalot is not going to be on your Christmas card list this year. Harry Maguire in with Lisandro Martinez. When I saw that, I was actually not too surprised. And I thought it was a good game to bring Maguire back in. You know, Everton under Sean Dyche could be quite physical. And I think Maguire had a good game anyway. And give Varane a little bit of a rest as well. You know, you don't want to overplay him. We saw Martinez partner Maguire, and then Malacia come in because Luke Shaw is out injured. Bruno Fernandes, Scott McTominay, and Marcel Sabitzer made up that midfield three. Same midfield that played against Newcastle, but we saw the tweaks, didn't we? We saw midweek as well, kind of what Ten Hag was trying to do. And I think we saw a really, really nice change to this midfield. We'll talk about it in more detail. There's a lot more balance. Same personnel, but different roles, different tactics, and a different outcome. And then the front three was a front three I think a lot of people wanted to see, and I've wanted to see. Jadon Sancho on the left, Marcus Rashford at number nine. Fortunately, he's injured. We'll drill into him a little bit later on. And Antony as the right winger. So what were your initial thoughts when you saw this? Were you quite pleased to see the lineup? And how are you feeling about, for example, seeing Sabitzer and Bruno as Bruno's eight and Sabitzer as a 10, and then Scott McTominay as a box-to-box player? Because we didn't see a holding six. And a lot of people will say Bruno was playing holding six. I want to drill in on Bruno as well, because I know that there's a lot, maybe some listeners that don't like some of your comments, and we'll talk about that. But again, there's no agendas here.
Yeah, well, when I saw the team sheet, I wasn't surprised. I wouldn't say I was pleased. So what did I like and what didn't I like? Well, Harry Maguire coming back in, like you said there, kind of understood it. I think when you're against like Keane and Tarkowski in the air, when you're thinking about set pieces, you might need someone who's a bit more of a specialist at heading a ball than, say, Martinez, who's next to him. That's just the way it goes sometimes in this type of game. United played 4-3-3. So, again, a lot of these prediction sites that put these up, and we use some of them, they didn't play 4-2-3-1 in the same way that Everton didn't play 4-4-2. They just didn't. They just didn't do that at all. It was much more of a mid to low block. And they were kind of playing a 4-5-1 at times, and even a five at the back. When you look at United, why did they play this system? Why did they kind of go from, say, what they did at Newcastle, where McTominay was clearly the 10, and why they switched at Brentford, and why it ended up with Sabitzer moving up to the 10, and then why did they repeat that against Everton in the last match? Well, going through it, it's all really fairly simple about why he's shifted to this 4-3-3. So there's two big reasons, and the names are Casemiro and Eriksen. So you haven't got those two. And I think it's shown maybe in the last month that United's performances have slid because they've tried to maintain that 4-1-5 header that's worked so well all season long. And Ten Hag's got to a point where he just realised it hasn't been working. So he's shifted to the 4-3-3. So he did that against Newcastle and it was a nightmare. And it was a nightmare because the midfield three didn't know what they were doing. Not as a collective. McTominay running on. Sabitzer kind of a bit wild, as I described it. And then kind of Bruno being way too deep at times. What's the difference from then to now? Why did it work so well against Everton? Well, we'll just talk about Bruno Fernandes because I think this is always really important. So as I always say, we give players their flowers when they play well, and when they don't, we do the opposite. So Bruno Fernandes' last two games has been superb. Yeah, he didn't play as the six because Man United didn't play with a six yesterday. They played 4-3-3 with two eights and a running on 10. That's what they did. McTominay played the box-to-box function. And Bruno played the more kind of midfield pivot role where he would sit a little bit deeper, be the out ball for both Martinez and for Maguire, maybe protect a little bit one side. I don't know if you noticed that in the game. He was drifting to the left generally to go and protect Malacia at times. So he had a multiple role to do yesterday. But what it was all about was getting him on the ball and then playing it much longer. So Man United played this 4-3-3 and they went for length. That's not something we've seen Ten Hag do a lot of since he's come to the football club, but it worked so well. And this is why you won the football match, because you had control in the midfield parts of the park. And also your back four were really good yesterday as well. In terms of just their shape, still think we can get a lot more out of Malacia. Like I watched the boy and I think like he's got talent. He's got, you know, there's like future ability there bubbling, but he's so short on some stuff. He really, really is. He just kind of is a bit wild still. Well, I think on the other side, Wan-Bissaka, and I'm going to ring his bell, does everything that Dalot doesn't do. Yeah, he's got much more energy. He pushes you higher up the park. He inverts better. He's actually getting into the box now. It's kind of bizarre watching him and almost a little bit frightening.
He should have scored, to be honest, didn't he?
Of course he should have. Yeah, but you can forgive him that. Like what you would say as a manager is to him, well done for doing that. Now do it again. Yeah, you will get your moment. You will put the ball in the net. So that's what you want from him. Whereas Delo, I think, has retracted and gone into his shell. So just looking at the forward areas there, so Jaden playing to the left, Anthony to the right. We're going to show you some passing stats a bit later on, where Jaden Sancho shows why Jaden is improving. So I think for Jaden, it's small steps, baby steps forward. But I think this is the way it has to be with him, is that he has to utilize the minutes he gets. He got the nod over Anthony yesterday. Anthony got pulled. Jaden stayed on. Jaden went to the right. 5 minutes later, it wasn't working. Jaden went back to the left. And it was about trying to make it work. But of course, the big issue now, of course, going forward is Marcus Rashford. I think that injury didn't look very clever at all. I know the manager last night came out and said he didn't. It doesn't look well, and kind of mean it doesn't look good. But when he did it to the side, we could kind of see how much trouble he was in. And I dare say it, I'm thinking maybe worse than good. I think might be a month. I think that's a groin, and I think it popped. And I think when he walked off, there was no like shaking it off or I've got cramp. He was properly like ginger all the way back to the tunnel and didn't at once flex it or anything, was in trouble. So that's a big deal for Man United, because I think obviously without Marcus Rashford this year, Man United would not be in the top four.
Very concerning, I think, with Marcus. Look, there's, I think you maybe say that Ten Hag's overplayed him at times. I think Ten Hag hasn't rotated as much, but again,
what can you do? Look,
what I would say is, what can you do? Yeah, the options, we haven't had many options there. Martial coming back, but this is where it's an opportunity for the likes of Jadon Sancho, Anthony Martial, Anthony to step up. We need more goals from these three, but it's also an opportunity for the likes of Sabitzer, for Bruno to influence games more, and it's important to see like how Ten Hag's going to deal without his most dangerous player. Marcus Rashford scored 34% of Man United's goals this season. Should not be the case. It's too many goals. He's been fantastic. But Rob, I do want to talk about Sabitzer as well, because he came to the club in January and was thrown straight in, and difficult situation. Casemiro getting that, you know, that red card, and it was Sabitzer played with Fred. Didn't really work in terms of the balance. He's played with Bruno. Again, this, it's been a little bit off in terms of balance. He's played with McTominay as well. So he's played with all three, thrown right into the deep end. And I think considering that, considering almost no time to get up to speed, he's done really, really well. He's slotted in. He's got some really good, let's say, attributes to his game, I think, which Ten Hag has identified. So I think something we've seen is that he can strike the ball really beautifully. You know, when he's in those dangerous areas where he gets opportunity to shoot, he's got a really good shot on him. So that's the first thing I want to say. Secondly, he's an absolute defensive machine, and he's a pressing machine as well. If you look at the statistics in terms of tackles, he's in the top 95th percentile out of the midfielders in Europe. He's sensational for this sort of counter-pressing system. So it's interesting to see, because we saw him play further up. We saw Bruno a little bit further deeper as well. And Bruno had a really good performance. I do want to talk about it because, you know, when he's given time on the ball, I personally, I'm a big fan of Bruno Fernandes. When Eriksen and Casemiro are back, he's my first choice number 10, and he will be. I think he's a world-class footballer, and I absolutely love him. I think he's great. He's got frustrations on the ball, but Bruno Fernandes has been asked to play deep. He's been asked to, in Casemiro's absence, he's played out wide, obviously, when Casemiro was here. He plays an 8, he plays at a 10, and yet he's still influencing games, and he's still a positive impact, in my opinion. Yes, there are times where his control on the ball can be poor. But what you saw with him and Sabitzer was they actually had it was quite a nice foil, wasn't it? Like Sabitzer would go forward and he'd show for the ball. Bruno would be able to, let's say, find the long ball, or he'd play it into Sabitzer. And Sabitzer's got good physicality to hold the ball. Obviously, I don't think he's got the guile of Bruno, let's say, or less and of Eriksen. But it's actually an interesting combination, which Ten Hag can now take into the final, let's say, a month and a half of the season, where you've got two players that can almost interchange. One can play as an 8, the other can play as a 10. Both have attacking capabilities. Both also offer similar pressing function, in my opinion. I think Sabitzer is the closest to, let's say, Bruno in terms of that function. So let's say you're going to give Bruno a rest because he's played more games than anyone in Europe. Sabitzer has emerged now as a really interesting option, I think. So you could play a Casemiro, Eriksen, and Sabitzer midfield. You could swap Sabitzer and Eriksen. I wouldn't do that, but that's an option. So now suddenly from last season, and this is why I give Ten Hag a lot of credit, is that last season, we know we didn't obviously have Eriksen, Casemiro, and Sabitzer. But what he's done is he's found, like, Ten Hag's kind of found a system that, okay, it doesn't work, let's say, in as high a level as with Eriksen and Casemiro. But when Casemiro doesn't play, this midfield of McTominay, Bruno, and Sabitzer has got results, and there's some balance there. So I think that's really positive, is that last season we'd be completely stuck, but now there's still Fred to come back in. And I think Fred offers something as well in terms of his pressing and off the ball work with Casemiro that United can really benefit from. So that, what I'm trying to say is there's options here, and Sabitzer and Bruno are interchangeable in my opinion, because they have similar attributes off the ball. And I think it just gives United more tactical flexibility and more variation, which we haven't had for a long time.
Yeah, look, versatility is a good thing, but having a load of people that can do different stuff, but none of them are a master of it, is a problem. So that's the way I look at this. So, yeah, these last two games, 4-3-3 has worked for you really well. You've won these two games, but it was only like last week we were talking about Newcastle where it didn't work. So I think that 4-3-3 is not an optimal shape for Manchester United as it stands today. So you just said there about Bruno potentially getting a rest. No one gets a rest now. We're at the point of the season where rest is gone. Yeah, it's just about winning. How do you win? So really the way you do that is by playing your best players all the time. This manager has shown that even when everyone was fit earlier in the season, he does not rotate. It's not what he does. He wants his best team out there, and I think that's what we'll see. So the last two games, I still think he felt that that midfield three was his best option in terms of the role playing. So let's talk a little bit about Sabitzer. So Sabitzer, I think, as a 10, it's been a surprise we've waited this long to see him play the 10, because he's done that in the Bundesliga previously. You were comparing him more to Bruno. I'm going to compare him to someone else. I'm going to compare him to Weghorst. So what he was doing as the 10 yesterday was basically the 9 press that Weghorst has been doing in weeks gone by. But now Weghorst has been taken out of the firing line because he can't hit a barn door. So that's the problem. So you still need someone to press. So yesterday, Marcus wasn't really doing the press as the number 9. It was Sabitzer running beyond from the 10. So there's the comparison maybe with Bruno, but I think that's where it ends. I think in terms of profile of player, they're chalk and cheese. They're completely different kind of footballers or what they want to do. They can both play 8. They can both play 10, but they are not the same. They are very different. So I think with Sabitzer is that we won't probably see him play 10 now going forward. Why? Because I think United, from this 4-3-3, which they've had to play with Casemiro being suspended and Eriksen being out of your team, you're now going to switch back to the 4-1-5 that you saw maybe 2-3 months ago that was massively super hyper post-World Cup working incredibly well. Like, it was perfect, yeah? You were going through that period of form where you had players fit, and it all ended the day that that big Geordie guy went right through Eriksen's leg and took him out of the frame. And then, of course, Casemiro decided to get sent off a couple of times. So this is why those things have changed. You can't really do the same stuff that was working really well, say, the last 3-4-5 weeks, going back 3-4-5 months. You just haven't had the personnel. So you've had to try and do something different. It's worked at times, but it hasn't always worked. But I think in this game, and kind of drilling down on the detail here, when you look at where Sabitzer played and where Rashford played, Rashford as the 9 still wants to go into the channel, and that's fine. That's where Marcus does his best work. But then you do lose a little bit of centre-forward presence, which just having Weghorst there between two centre-backs does help you move forward. But that's why Sabitzer was vital in this game, because he was the guy kind of driving into the box and doing a lot of that dog's work. Like, in the stadium, Haydar, again, I don't always know if it translates on TV, but he was actually going from the halfway line and doing like almost like shuttle sprints towards Pickford, like proper workout stuff. Like, you go, oh my God, it's like, you know, the cardio to get from there to there and then do it 10 times in a game is really impressive. But I do think United will go back to 4-1-5 now, because I think if you've got Casemiro in your team, you've got Eriksen in your team, you can play some more actual football. United yesterday won the game, Haydar. I mean, it wasn't the most beautiful game. They went long. They tried to play. They didn't play a lot of stuff on the deck. They were looking for the channels, looking for the ball over the top. And I think that's why Bruno also looked good in the game, because he had more time to work those things out, to hit the channel, hit Antony, hit Sancho, hit Marcus. And it worked really well. And that is why you won the football match.
Before we drill into the 4-3-3 versus 4-1-5, I know you've touched on it a little bit. We'll go into the differences and the pros and cons in a second, but let's actually just talk about some of the statistics. So United, you're right, United went long a lot more, but I think that there's very few players better than Bruno Fernandes at picking that pass. I mean, his accuracy in terms of his passing from deep is fantastic, and we've seen that he's absolute clutch when it comes to being able to play a through ball. And Marcus enjoyed it as well. You know, Marcus likes to run into that channel and to run in behind. So I think that was positive. United had 29 shots at home. That's, I believe, the most this season. So they had a very effective performance. And the XG was the second highest it's been in the Premier League this season. Leicester game being the one that was more so. You can see here from United, you know, a couple of counterattacks here. 18 shots from open play as well. So they created a lot. But I think the key one here is this graphic. So when you have a look at the types of passes, and so United had 628 passes, 9 crosses, they had 7 through balls. So again, you can see that's the impact of Bruno playing deeper, right? I think you have to take into account, Rob, that no Casemiro is big, no Eriksen is big. We'll talk about Eriksen. I know we keep on saying that we'll do that, but we will do that because I want to really drill in on what Eriksen brings to this Manchester United side. But when you have a look at it, United have really struggled from progression. They've struggled to connect defense to attack without Eriksen and without Casemiro as well. So Ten Hag's seen that, probably dropping Bruno deeper while he has deficiencies sometimes in terms of control. But what he will give you is he'll give you progression. He'll be able to connect the dots. So 7 through balls from deep. I'm going to say from deep because when I watched the game, I saw Bruno do it maybe, 4 times, I think, during the game, 4 or 5 times. That really helped United to get up the pitch and to be effective. But I think the key one here, Rob, you're looking here, 59 long balls. I'm going to let you talk about this one because Everton had 62. Mm. 59 long balls is a lot of long balls, something you don't really associate with a Ten Hag team. So why is the case? Why did United play more long balls? And why is this a key statistic looking at this game in isolation?
Well, before the game, of course, people would say, oh, who are the long ball team and who wants to play the short and cute stuff? Well, Man United are the short and cute team and Everton are the team at the bottom of the table trying to push the ball over the top. No, not really. I think, again, we get snobbish about what is a long ball and a long pass or what is creative and what is reductive. So you just said there about Bruno. Bruno kind of picking the ball up off the back four in midfield areas in transition. Of course, the open pass there is the ball over the top into the channel, exploiting your own pace against their maybe lack of pace with their centre-backs. That's a good tactic. That shouldn't be kind of completely sniffed at. Like, it's too easy to just go, oh, we don't want to see long balls. Man City play plenty of long balls, but they also play the ball really well on the deck. It's about doing everything well, isn't it? When you look at the passing profile here, you see United still won the short passing game there, 553, but also similar amount of long balls. I think when it says about through balls there, it was the through balls really were the ones over the top, and they were mainly to Antony in that first half. So Antony was really stretching the width and finding a lot of space behind the fullbacks in the defence, and he really should have scored yesterday. He had 2 or 3 really kind of gilt edge opportunities. I think when you think about this going forward, Haydar, like you just said about Bruno and about, you know, he played well and he did play well, and like I said, he absolutely deserves a pat on the back, played the role really well these last two games. I still, in my, you know, deep in my skin, feel that Eriksen plays it just loads better. So if Eriksen is fit, you play Eriksen there. That means you have to get Bruno doing something else. So I don't think we'll see 2-8 with Bruno and Eriksen. I think, I'm not saying they're too similar, but they're not box-to-box functionality. This doesn't really work. And that's why McTominay's playing this box-to-box role. Like, it's what he was doing for Scotland, playing higher up. And when he's in the box, he's got a decent conversion rate at the moment. So you're leaning on that. It's not something we want to see. We don't want to see him as a 10, and we don't want to see him being the guy that gets on the end of every cross, but he does just give you better box-to-box functionality. But yesterday, that game was won and lost by United by being creative over the top. And as I said, I use the word not reductive. It wasn't just long balls like Everton were playing. Everton had one player up top and they were playing long, trying to look over the top of Maguire, look over the top of Martinez. It's not particularly clever football, especially if you've only got one player running on and then De Gea has to sweep up behind. That all worked really well for United. That's why they got the clean sheet. But I think when you look at the profile of the game, going long is not a problem, Haydar, if it's getting you chances on goals. And that's exactly what Ten Hag did in this game. It worked a treat.
I think it's important to say as well, Rob, that I agree with you because I don't expect Bruno, and I don't want to see Bruno as an 8 regularly because I think you're negating what he's good at. You get him closer to goal, you get him, you know, within, you know, maybe in those pockets outside the penalty area or running into the penalty area. He's super effective. So that's where I want to see him personally. But yeah, if he needs to fill in as a number 8, he can do it. There are deficiencies.
Yeah, of course.
I think it's important. Yeah. I think the important thing is nuance here. So I don't think you're saying he's a terrible footballer.
No. He can fill in. Yeah, fill in is not the optimal position. Like I just said, like doing stuff that you can do, but you don't do very well. We're still doing stuff, isn't it? But you're just not doing it great. So like this
but
is just the point.
Is...
So you're forced to do some stuff sometimes because that's what sport is. That's what football is. You're forced to play players where you don't really want to play them. Like I've talked about Marcus. I don't want to see through the middle because he's not as good. His metrics show as a nine, he doesn't score goals. But as playing in that wider role, he scores goals every week. So these are not difficult things for people to see. And I think, again, people want to jump on certain stuff. Like here, I've seen the comments already about Bruno, and I'll address it, okay? I've said this before. When United are playing their best football, Bruno Fernandes was playing left or right, yeah? And you had Eriksen and Casemiro run the games. And that's hopefully where we'll go again. But people will say they want to see Bruno in the 10. Now, that's where I want to see Bruno in the 10. But Ten Hag has played him everywhere but the 10 when he's had the opportunity to. So that's on Erik Ten Hag, not me or you. So, like, this is the thing. So
let me ask you the question then, because I think where I disagree with you. So I think Bruno Fernandes is one of the best number 10s in the Premier League. And I think he's up there in world football. I think what he offered, I think any side would be delighted to have a player like that who's so effective in terms of creating chances, in terms of assists, in terms of having a goal threat. He can press as well. I think where he has a deficiency in this game can be sometimes decision making in terms of playing the easy ball, or sometimes, for example, his control. You know, sometimes you need. We talk about Odegaard a lot, don't we? Me and you, we talk about him a lot on this show because he's a definition of control, coolness, calmness when he's on the ball. A fantastic player, but I don't think that Bruno Fernandes is any less creative than a player like that. I think he's just got a deficiency in his game, which can be frustrating, but he's still the player that I'd have at number 10. I think that's where we disagree, is that I think you'd probably sell him, right? No? If a good offer came in.
No, not at all. Like what I said, right, and this is where people like either just don't listen to me or just don't read like what's actually being written properly. Yeah, I wouldn't sell Bruno Fernandes. I said the manager might sell Bruno Fernandes. There's a difference. Hear me, people. So I say that because he's not playing Bruno in his optimal role as the 10. Why is he not playing him as a 10? Well, there's multiple reasons, but let's look at the recent ones. He's had to play him in midfield because of the injuries, because of the suspensions. That's why Bruno's playing as the 8. I don't think Erik ten Hag for one moment thinks, oh, I'm really happy playing Bruno Fernandes as my 8 and that's my optimal choice. Agreed. No, that's not what he's thinking. So we all believe that Bruno on the edge of the box and in the box is one of the best number 10s in the world. I've said that. You just said that. It just came out of your mouth. The other bit I've added as a caveat is, why is the manager not playing him as the 10 when he's fully fit and everyone else is fully fit? No one can answer me that, Haydar. No one can answer me that. They just want to play, I love Bruno, I hate Bruno. Like, I'm not playing that. I don't do that. It's not what I do, kind of my journalism and my punditry. I'm just not interested in that. So let's see what happens now, because for me, it would make sense, wouldn't it? Or what I prefer is that Bruno plays the 10, that Eriksen plays the 8, and Casemiro plays the 6. And that's where we were at one point in the season, earlier in the season. But we weren't winning games. We were having trouble still then, weren't we? When Bruno went to the wider areas where people hate him, I don't want him left, I don't want him right, people say, United were winning games much more convincingly, much more control, and we were cantering through matches and winning 3-4-0, Haydar. So there's a difference. So people, like you just said, Dan, I don't know if it's because you've picked it up wrong, Haydar. I've not once said, oh, sell Bruno Fernandes. What I've said is that the manager might well look at his options and say, right, I've got a midfielder here in Eriksen. He's going to start every week if he's fit. I've got Casemiro. He starts every week when he's fit. So what do I do in the 10 to get the best out of Marcus, to get the best out of whoever my striker is? Now, I've said, if you sign Harry Kane, Bruno Fernandes is the perfect 10. Yeah, like Son playing close to him. They can play little short balls. He can come deep, interchange with each other. Perfection. Harry Kane doesn't play for Man United at the moment, right? So there's no point in kind of highlighting it. My point is that Bruno Fernandes doesn't play the 10. You have to ask the manager, why is he not playing him as the 10? And I think Erik ten Hag, being fairly stoic, is just like, no, I'm not going to address that. Why should I? What you might find is that if he has to sell players, Haydar, to buy, you might get sacrificed one of the bigger players that people love. You might even sacrifice a Sancho. You're not going to sacrifice Rashford, are you? Anthony's staying for the long haul. You might look at Bruno and say, well, he's the guy that gets moved around. He's the guy that is the number 10, but doesn't play 10 all the time. And that then means that you might go do something different. That's all I've said. So that's my explanation. I see in the comments people going on about Bruno. You can go on about Bruno till you're blue in the face. I like Bruno Fernandes when he does Bruno things, and when he does silly things and rubbish things and is lesser than himself, then he's going to get criticised for that.
No, I listen, I completely understand where you're coming from. We've had conversations off air about this, and I completely understand where you're coming from. And I think it's important as well to address when, you know, let's say when Bruno plays well, but I think it's important to address when he doesn't play well, like with any other player. And I think this is a
completely
problem. Players are going to have good games and bad games. I think it's really important as let's say, I'm going to say as fans, or even as, let's say, as an analyst, to be able to pick up and say why they didn't have a good game. We've said this before. We said this about Marcus last season, didn't we, Rob? Is that when Marcus was playing really, really poorly, and there were a lot of issues there as well, but when he was not performing, we called him out on it. And you have Correct. To do this. You have to have these high standards yeah. and expectations of your players. But then on top of that, obviously, you don't want to have agendas, and we see that. Unfortunately, I think the football sphere, let's say, and I don't spend much time on Twitter anymore, as you know this, and we've said this many, many times, and this is why we do this show, because we want to make sure that we're providing as much nuanced and balanced conversations as possible. But we're going to talk about negatives. You have to. If there's negatives that need to be addressed. But I think, unfortunately, the problem with the, let's say, the Twitter sphere is that it's either this extreme or that extreme consistency, this consistently, and things are for clicks. So I think it's important that you've been able to explain your position. I think that's important. But I also do disagree with you on some factors in terms of,
and
like,
you're allowed.
I would like to Bruno, yeah, and that's absolutely fine. And people are allowed. But I think for me, what's key is that with Eriksen and Casemiro back, and let's talk about that 4-1-5 as well, the pros and cons, yeah. because you can't play that system, the 4-1-5, without Casemiro, a proper,
or Eriksen.
Or Eriksen, well, proper number six. No. I want to talk about Eriksen at the end, so we won't go too much into Eriksen as well. But
yeah.
let's talk about those pros and cons, because you can see here that United obviously had a really good performance, and I'm going to take it to the next slide, playing as a 4-3-3, because mm-hmm. you can see here United created a high number of chances relative to possession. They were effective at creating goal scoring opportunities from through balls. We've already established that Bruno Fernandes playing deeper allowed United to go long over the top. With his mm-hmm. very, very good passing, long passing accuracy, they're effective at creating opportunities from goal, from counterattacks as well. They're also effective from set pieces. We saw Maguire come in, and that helps United from set pieces as well, provide a little bit of height. Where they were poor finishing, we've been saying that all season. United need a number nine, hence why we mentioned Harry Kane just now. And there are other players. I really like Ivan Toney, to be honest, Rob. Unfortunately, he's probably going to get a ban, but mm-hmm. I think he has all the attributes to be a fantastic number nine for Man United. And Victor Osimhen has been spoken about. He's having a great season at a really exciting Napoli side. United gave away a lot of free kicks around the box, discipline problems. They were caught offside often. What were the stylistic positives about United against Everton? Attack through the middle, had a high shot frequency when in possession, dominated possession, favoured through balls. So if we're looking at this in isolation, look, there's so many factors as to why United will move away from the 4-3-3. And we've seen that Newcastle being an example of that as well. And we've seen United play well as a 4-1-5. But having a look at what Ten Hag's managed to coach yesterday, like, people might be asking, why is he going to go back to the 4-1-5? Why 4-3-3? So just let's talk about those pros and cons, because in some people's heads, a 4-3-3 is considered attacking, and that's probably because of FIFA and things like that. And a 4-1-5 maybe doesn't sound as attacking, although it does, because you know you are allowed to push players up higher, aren't you, with the five going forward? So yeah, what are the pros and cons here?
4-1-5 allows you to press better. It's just as simple as that. So the elite coaches all want pressing systems. That's how it goes. It's just what it is. Guardiola has his version. Klopp has his version. And as you go up the pyramid, you look at even the likes of, say, let's take a Brighton, for example. Brighton have found an effective way with kind of three at the back and pressing through the midfield into the higher areas. So it really is just about, it's about philosophy as much as function. When you look at kind of the match summary here, if you're a manager and you win this game 2-0, like Erik ten Hag did, what you're going to be focusing on in training in 2 days' time when they've had their day's rest is what went wrong. You're not going to work on what went right, because you're just saying to your players, yeah, do more of that. That's not really coaching. That's just reinforcing. So poor at finishing. So that was very evident in this game. United really wasteful once they were in the final third. The next one down there gave away a lot of free kicks around the box. So that was a real issue with the fullbacks. Mainly Malacia flying in again, being wild in his work as opposed to staying on his feet. Bit more controlled from Wan-Bissaka on the right-hand side. We know that he's very good at tackling, doesn't always give away too many fouls, but can do. And what are you going to do against Everton, Haydar? Make sure you don't give away free kicks around the box. So again, if I'm Erik ten Hag, I'm looking at that and I'm digging into that. Why are you giving away free kicks there? That's wrong. Let's work on that. Caught on the offside thing a lot. I didn't really, really feel that. I think that if you're going to go long and go over the top, there's always that chance that your centre forward or your wide player is just the wrong side of the halfway line. What you really want them to do is just stay on this side of the halfway line and stay in there when you're going long on the counter attack. So overall, you won the game because you kind of did all the key things really, really well without excelling. Because I think if United excelled yesterday, Haydo, you win this game 5 or 6 nil. Like you win it like Man City when City are at their best in the last two, three, 4 years. Yeah. That, and the reason why the top teams win games by big margins is because they do everything really well, but then there's two or three parts of the game that they absolutely slay. They absolutely get you to where you want to be. United yesterday did everything okay, did everything well in midfield, did all the kind of key bits and bobs, but it wasn't really kind of step forward. You weren't really like, you beat Everton, but you didn't particularly thrash them. It was 2-0 at the end of the day. And that was probably about the right result. But at this time of the season, Haydar, it isn't about overtly spectacular performances. It's about winning games and winning games through the grind. So I think United yesterday did that really well. They grinded through that match. They worked really hard in a way that it didn't work against Newcastle. They took that forward against Brentford. They worked hard against Brentford. And they put in another shift here. Unfortunately, of course, now you're going to have to deal with a big positive now of Casemiro and Eriksen coming back, which is fantastic. And a huge, huge loss of Marcus Rashford. That cannot be underestimated, that those two things might unfortunately counteract each other. Like you might get loads more control in midfield and you're converging at the top end of the rate. I think in this game, the conversion rate was 6%, which is rubbish. Your conversion rate might be 0 next week because you haven't got Marcus Rashford. So that's a problem, even if you've got Eriksen and Casemiro back. But we don't want to kind of dwell on that too much, but it's something for fans to kind of maybe get into their heads. And what I will just say is one thing, just off the back of the comments, because I can still see the Bruno comments coming through here. Just want to say this, is that we are not a fan reaction show, right? When we do these shows and we plan them and put them out, we're not here to shout at you and tell you what we think that you're wrong. We're just trying to look at the tactics or how the manager did it and why the manager might do it differently next time or what he would have changed. We try and keep it salient. Bruno Fernandes, just to kind of close that one off, I still don't think that Bruno is the complete player as to what you would want him to be. I want more from Bruno Fernandes, but I do think that when he's in the box and around the box, for me, he's one of the best number 10s in the world. I've said that 1,000 times. And that's why I'd rather see Bruno play number 10 next week than say play 8 or maybe as a 6-8. Or I see why he's played wide, because when he's played wide, Man United have been sensational. So I think that's what you sacrifice, is you move Bruno's best ability from the middle to maybe one of the wider roles. But then, of course, you've got Sancho coming back. There is that option there of playing a proper wide player in the wide positions.
I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of when United get their first choice midfield back, there will be more domination of the ball. We'll be able to control middle of the park better. And so there may be, perhaps that will, well, I'm going to talk about Jadon Sancho now, Rob, because we've got on the screen, we've got the pass accuracy. So Jadon Sancho, I'm going to pick him out because 95% pass accuracy is sensational. Like, I've really liked his performances the last two games. Can he be better? Of course. But I think you know, a lot of fans have lost faith in Sancho. He offers something, and he's not going to be like Garnacho, for example. Garnacho is explosive. He'll take on his man. What Jadon Sancho is elite at is combination play, and he's a playmaker, essentially. Yeah. So if you've got a midfield, and this is what I'm kind of thinking, this is why losing Marcus Rashford is huge, and it is going to be very interesting to see how we counteract that. But if you get your main midfield back of Eriksen and Casemiro, you can dominate possession. If you can dominate possession, you can dominate territory. You can push further up. That, in theory, could mean that if Jadon Sancho is playing off that left-hand side, this is just some thoughts that I've been thinking about, you know, since we've heard Rashford get injured, is that you'll get Sancho, he'll have more possession, which means he can have more options, he'll be more creative. And I think what you'll see then is you might see, Sancho closer to what we saw at Dortmund in terms of being a playmaker, because of the fact that he knows that we're consistently dominating possession. We're camped out in good territory. That's what I'm trying to say. And I think we might see a better Sancho rather than, let's say, when Casemiro and Eriksen don't play, the game is much more end-to-end. You know, United are going from back, attack to defence. There's no one there to control it. But if he's playing in the pockets, I think he can be really creative. Then you might see Martial as number 9, and he's very good at his link-up play as well. So I think you might see Sancho start a few more games and maybe elevate it. It's just an idea. It's just something I was thinking about. Because United have got to find something different. We don't have Sancho's not explosive like Rashford, and people need to maybe stop expecting that from him. He's not like Garnacho in terms of explosion, but he's an elite playmaker. he's when he has someone to play off and there's the combination play, he looks really, really good. And I think with Eriksen behind him, perhaps Bruno as a number 10 and Casemiro, United dominating territory and possession, I think we'll see a better Jadon Sancho. That's just kind of how I'm thinking about it at the moment.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but again, I think there's a ton of nuance in there that you do have to address with Jadon Sancho. So yesterday, was it 76 minutes he played, 95% pass accuracy? Spectacular. That is the level, yeah? If you want to win titles or you want to consider yourself a title-challenging team, which is what Man United want to be, you need players hovering around that, what I call 9 out of 10 passes. So that's 90%. You need players pushing beyond that, making sure that they're not giving the ball away cheaply. And I think that's, again, been one of Man United's problems for years, isn't it? Not just in recent times. We can go back to previous managers where United are just very cheap on the ball. You just use the word their playmaker for Jadon Sancho. Now, Jadon Sancho, a guy who in the Bundesliga scored lots of goals and got lots of assists, kind of a 20 and 20 guy, 40 goals a season. I think sometimes we get a bit skewed as to what the word playmaker means. I think when you're in the final third, you're not actually the playmaker. You're the one actually putting the ball in the net or putting the final pass in. Is that playmaking? I'm not so sure. I think the playmaking comes from the 10 and deeper. So I think United, going back to that, Eriksen and Casemiro from deep are kind of your playmakers at times. They're the ones who actually spot those passes and can either switch play and get you going the right way. Yesterday, Bruno playing deeper was the playmaker, wasn't he? And he was doing it from deeper roles. So I think we sometimes get obsessed about what is a playmaker. Antony has the opposite. People go, he doesn't playmake enough. Well, he's not a playmaker. He's never playmaker. He's a winger and he likes to invert and that's what he does. But he's not a massive creative force in the same way that Marcus isn't really a playmaker on the left, is he? He's a goal scorer now. So this is about balance and what we describe players as. I think with Jadon, and this is the key for Jadon, if he is going to carry on in this team and carry on getting more minutes and more games and be more viable next season, we need to see what we saw yesterday as the base level. And the problem for Jadon, and the problem with Jadon all season long, is that that's not been the case. We've got 2-3 good games, 4-5 bad games. 2-3 good games or one like spectacular game where he moves into the 10 or something and we like what we see and we get excited and then we see a bad game. I think yesterday, pushing Marcus into the 9 meant that you could get Jadon on the left and let them play quite close. Ten Hag said after the game, he spoke a bit about Martial and he said he wanted to see that kind of closeness between Martial and Rashford. That's why he put Rashford left and made that little switch. I think he thinks the same with Rashford and Sancho, is that he wants to see them play together and interact because they're mates, they like each other, and they have an affinity with each other. I think with Jadon Sancho, you have to ask yourself now, if Marcus is out the team, do you play Sancho? I'm not so sure. You might go and play Bruno in one of those wide areas. Why? Because Bruno, when he played left or played right, you were winning games at a canter. So you might switch back to that Haydar. I know we all want to see more Sancho minutes. We are not at the point of the season now where we can be that expensive. If playing Sancho means you might lose one match now to the end of the season, Haydar, you can't do it. You have to make that decision on the training pitch. So that's what the manager will be doing now. He'll be saying, right, who is expensive and who isn't? That's why you've seen Weghorst go out the team. He became too expensive. He still gave you your press, but he became expensive. You weren't scoring goals through the 9. So I think with Sancho in this game, what's the metric there? 5 key passes. That's really good. 95%, really, really good. Now what you'd be saying to Jadon is that, right, if you're on the pitch even 20 minutes the next game, that's the metric I want. I want a key pass out of you and I want 95% ball succession. And that's the same with Bruno. Bruno, 86% there from a deeper position. When Bruno plays the 10, he does sometimes drop to the 70s. It's not good enough. If you do that, you're not playing there, mate. I don't care how much people love you. So this is what you have to say to all the players now. Just one more down there, Haydar. 2 players. We'll talk about Eriksen in a second. I know people are excited. But Martial, 93% from the striker role. And he was on for 27 minutes? Yeah? Or he came on the 60th minute, it said so. Yeah.
Yeah. Half an hour, yeah.
That's world class. That's world class. That's what you want your 9 to do. That's what Ronaldo wasn't doing. And even though Weghorst was doing that, he wasn't giving you finishing. What happened yesterday? Martial gets a ball inside. He's almost having a sleep. He's like, I'm in the middle of the pitch. I'll take one touch and I'll just slot it away like I'm doing it out of rotation. Just so easy to me. And that's what we've missed with Anthony Martial. And that's what we've missed as a number 9.
Completely agree on Martial's point. Like I say all the time, Rob, a player's superpower is keeping fit. And unfortunately, Martial just can't do that. But it's great to have him back because you can immediately see he's a player who's really comfortable playing the final third in terms of his close control, something Vegas hasn't really got. Mm-hmm. He brings people into play. And look, he's a fantastic, fantastic player. His talent's never been in doubt. Unfortunately, it's his ability to keep fit. And we really need
him
to
keep fit. He can conduct traffic. As a nine, he can go in other places on the pitch and help you and conduct the flow of the game. And that's unfortunately what Vegas doesn't. And Vegas does the opposite. Vegas runs in that direction and keeps your press in shape. So that has value. But that's what Marcus doesn't do. Marcus doesn't conduct play as a nine and he doesn't press. But yeah, Marcus scores goals, but he scores them from the left. So this is the balance, isn't it? And when we'll be talking in weeks and months ahead about who your next striker will be, it will have to be a number nine that conducts traffic. Yeah. You have to have that kind of number nine. And it's going to be Harry Kane. So that's the point, is that that's why you look for that kind of profile of player. It's not a popularity contest, it's tactics.
Let's talk about Eriksen, because I'm very excited to see him back. I'm delighted to see him back. He's a fantastic footballer. We know this already. But I think one of the biggest things about Christian Eriksen, Rob, is that while Casemiro is one of the most important players in the team, we've actually lacked and lost Eriksen's progression and control in midfield. And actually, that's why United have become worse, I think. And I think it's affected all the other players. Bruno Fernandes played his best football when he had Eriksen in the side. We've seen even with Casemiro in the side, and the stats don't lie. When Casemiro's out, both of them out, you know, United struggle, let's be honest. Any team would struggle if both their first choice midfielders were out, let's be honest, whether it's Arsenal, whether it's City. When you're looking at Christian Eriksen, though, is that he has something in the squad which nobody else has. It's his ability to almost have more time on the ball than anybody else. Now, his little cameo yesterday was really, really good. And what I really liked about him was that, you can see here from some of his strengths on the graphic, is that key passes are really, really important. But what he does is everyone around him just calms down. You know, he gets on the ball. And when you want to see out a game, when you have game management, there's not many players better in the squad there is no players better in the squad to do that. So how important is it for him to obviously return? We've spoken about Martial's return, which would be important, but I think Christian Eriksen, in his time out injured, he's almost shown that we knew this already, but it's definitely shown that United's one of the first signings they should make in the summer is a player that can control the tempo of the game, who's progressive, and he can play in midfield. So we're looking at someone like Frenkie de Jong. It's just an example of that profile. And secondly, if United want to get to the elite level where they're challenging the likes of Arsenal at the top and Manchester City, they have to control the ball better in midfield. And they need more Christian Eriksen, you know, players who are comfortable in terms of receiving the ball with their back, with sort of turning from defence, in terms of controlling play, in terms of close control, and being economical with their passing, but also having the ability to just flip it and to play that key pass, to play someone in. Like, it's so important that he's back for us in this business end of the season, but it's also so important that going forward, United are signing players of similar ilk in terms of ability on the ball, because I think what Ten Hag has done has been fantastic up until level, but there's a ceiling, right? There's too many players in key positions who don't have the technical fundamentals and the close control and quality to play a possession-based football. Like, even if I look at Brighton, Rob, I'd argue that Brighton's midfield of McAllister, of Caicedo, and I believe Solly Marshall playing midfield? I'd argue technically and their ability to let's say, play possession-based football and their control is better than Manchester United's midfield. I think that's...
Massively, and I agree.
So this is something that going forward, United have to now start bringing players to this field. And to get Eriksen on the free is fantastic. But I think the biggest positive is that you'll see him and Casemiro back together. And while I'm really gutted about Rashford's injury, it's almost like a bittersweet, because we've got Eriksen coming back and I think we'll control games better. So I'm confident that, you know, we'll be able to have, like I said earlier, more control in the game, more possession, more territory. And I think United will still be able to win games. Maybe not as clinical without Marcus, though.
Yeah, I think it goes back to quite a few points we've already made on the show. So kind of just kind of wrap them up and wind them up. You see there in one of the comments they're saying about why do we create 30% less chances than City and Arsenal in games? because they pass the ball better than us. It's kind of as simple as that. They have better players. And it also then marries into the adage of what we just talked about of what is a playmaker. So a playmaker is not the guy in the box or around the box. The playmaking comes from deeper. So look at Christian Eriksen's numbers. And let's be honest here. Christian Eriksen's played primarily as a kind of 6-8 all season long, hasn't he? Kind of the what I would call the bottom side of the press. So if you've got Casemiro's the 6 and then you've got the 5 pressing together, he's been the kind of anchor at the bottom. And you can see that there from the positions on the pitch, both left and right, but very deep. That guy in 22 appearances has got 9 assists and 2 goals from 50 yards away from the goal. That's astonishing. So that's what you need when you like want to bridge that gap of 30% to the top teams. You need your Odegaard. You need your Kevin De Bruyne. You need players that can play from deep and make the cute passes. Yes, Bruno did it yesterday, but it's not something we see statistically from Bruno all the time. So Bruno's better, I think, in the box and being the guy on the end of the ball. I really do believe that. So I think when you're looking at Eriksen, in the 15 or 20 minutes that you played yesterday, just in that tiny, tiny window, just seeing him on a football pitch, you saw just how much Man United have missed a creator in the middle of the park. And he was getting the ball, and you said it as well, Haydar, there. The time that he creates for himself is almost like magical. And it is a little bit like Odegaard. Like when I watch Odegaard at Arsenal, that's what I think his superpower is. His superpower is a drop off, I can go wide, I come deep, but no one's ever within 20 yards of me because I'm just clever with my movement.
It's effortless, Rob.
It's effortless and it's programmed. And there are certain players that do it really well and certain players that don't. I've talked a lot about James Maddison in recent weeks. Now, James Maddison's not had a good few games for Leicester, and Leicester are terrible. But James Maddison's game is about the drift. I go find the space and then no one can get near me. And that's what Man United need in their midfield. Man United needs someone like Eriksen, but maybe a younger version. So that's why we talk about like someone like De Jong. But I don't think you're going to get De Jong. I just don't think that's a goer. But then there are other players. You've just said they're like at Brighton that you could go and get next season who are really good players. McAllister.
Really good
McAllister
player.
Is the obvious one. McAllister's the obvious one because he's a kind of number 10 that's got 8 sensibilities and is very, very tidy and efficient and can do all the midfield roles. He's like an upgraded Sabitzer in many ways. So it's about buying players that are just better on the ball, Haydar. And that's where you've got to be next season. Next season, you're looking to expand. This Eriksen experiment, and I call it an experiment because when he came to the club, I don't think many people thought he'd play number 8 every week. But he's gone from being a number 10 out and out in his previous life's career and going through it, it's always been a 10, to playing the 8, and he plays the 8 because of this, that noggin there, yeah? Because he just gives himself time and space. That's what you want from a midfielder. And then you can build around it, Haydar. Then you could buy more destructive midfielders or more, you know, more energetic midfielders. You could look at, say, a Declan Rice if he's next to an Eriksen. It's those type of things that you're then looking at combinations on your football pitch to go and win you titles. So Man United kind of found some of the answers this season, Haydar. But it's always just, it's either been hindered by injury and suspension or hindered by the fact that you maybe just one or two players light in the functionality of the team.
100%. Well, look, it's really positive to have him back. It's super important for United going into 2 cup competitions, securing top 4 as well. Yeah. So I'm very, very excited to see him. But obviously, he's going to have to get up to speed as well. So that's important. You know, he's not 100% match fit. But it's great to see him back because I wasn't really expecting to see him back this soon. I was expecting maybe, you know, even by the end of the month. But Rob, last final word as well. Look, fantastic 2 results for Manchester United. That's 6 points in the bag after a really poor run of form of 3 games with no goals. Obviously, the Liverpool result was in there as well after the EFL Cup. So going into the final, let's say month and a half of the season, how are you feeling? And look, we've got the Europa League as well. United hopefully can secure a big victory in that so that they can, you know, maybe rest a few players. Because look, United have played a lot of games now, so they really need to manage games. It's not really about performance, in my opinion, anymore. It's just about getting the results in the bag and finishing the season strongly.
Yeah, look, I'm pleased with the last 2 games. And I think now when you're at this business end of the season, it's just game by game. That's how you have to take it. Am I completely confident that Man United will come fourth? No, I'm not. Now, that's not being a pessimist, but that's giving maybe Tottenham more credit than maybe I think a lot of United fans are. United fans are watching Tottenham and going, they're rubbish, which I think they are too. But that doesn't mean that this late stage of the season that Tottenham can't put a few string of wins together. You saw Son scored yesterday. And to me, that's a little bit like that. You think, just coming into form at the wrong time for us, I'm talking about. And they go and beat a Brighton team that they should have lost to. And let's be honest, if VAR was working properly, they would have lost that game. But you can't kind of go too deeply into those differentials. So I think with Man United, it's the Rashford question is massive for me now. I think if you lose Rashford, you somehow have to supercharge Martial and get him in the team and get him playing more minutes. And I'd only said last week that's probably not going to happen, that Martial, you probably is only fit enough to play cameos and 20, 30 minutes here and there, which he can still score goals and help you. But that, you need someone like Marcus who's putting the ball in the net in the same way that you need a Casemiro doing the stuff at six, and you need someone like Eriksen doing the stuff at eight. All of these things matter, don't they, Haydar? You need a fit Varane. You need your back four as an optimum. You need everyone doing everything at the right time, at the right place. If you have one slip now, Haydar, lose one game in the Premier League, that probably will be enough to not come top four. That's how close we are. I think I said a few months ago, before the injuries and before the suspensions, if I'm Erik ten Hag after the World Cup, I'd be saying to my players, you don't lose another game this season now. That's the task. You don't lose one game. Because if you lose one game, that's enough now, especially with our goal difference to be fifth. Tottenham's goal difference is superior to ours. So fingers crossed for Man United. I don't feel awful about it, but I also don't feel particularly high. I think you managed these two games really, really well. They were banana skins. You could have lost these matches. You really could have, like, if you'd not been your best version of yourself. It's up to United now to bring the energy and the effort and not use the excuse, Haydar, that we're late in the season, we've played lots of games. So what? So has everyone. Every team has played lots of games. United played slightly more games, but it's now about maintaining performance so you can allow you that you can win those victories. But as you highlighted, if you play badly, win 1-0. That's all it comes down to now. And if we get to the end of the season and you come fourth and you've got a trophy in your pocket as well, I don't really care what happens in the Europa League now. I think it's more to me about the top four. That's really going to define whether you've had a successful season or not. And you're close, but you're maybe not as close as you'd have hoped. I'd have liked by now to say that top four was sealed. I'd have liked to gone, yeah, we're third, but we gave that away to Newcastle. They're the team on the rise, Haydar. I think they'll end up third this season, and rightfully so. And I think we'll be battling it out for that horrible fourth or fifth spot.
And guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, turn those notifications on as well. Give us a follow on at Man United MC. Rob will follow at @Rob_B to make sure you keep up to date with all our content. We will be trying to come to you every single week with new content. So make sure you turn those notifications on so you don't miss anything. Have a great weekend and we'll see you all next time.